Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up and welcome back to the Kind of Funny screencast. Of course, I'm Tim Geddes and I'm joined by the sad boy himself, Bear Courtney. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Do a monologue, Barrett.
I wrote the whole speech down.
The whole script is just written down in my notes. Oh, wow. There you
Ooh.
Go. Where were you this
you
week?
You got
Barrett?
The Ahsoka ones. I love that for you.
Very cool.
I love that for you.
You went to Galaxy's Edge for the first time.
Me chat can't hear me. There you go. Now you can hear it.
No.
There we go. Everything's different because I'm running things from home right now. So I gotta relearn my stuff from home. So I went to Galaxy's Edge for the first time in 3 years. Last time I was there was a couple weeks before Rise of the Resistance had opened. And so I got to do that twice in the last couple of days, which was such a magical time. It was seriously like I can't explain how special that ride
was. That's just not just like a bunch of Star Wars nerds on a video call together saying the Star Wars ride is the best ride. It really is the best ride.
It's insane. It's like I didn't think. Everybody like was hyping it up, and I was like, I don't know how this lives up to the hype that everybody's trying to sell me on, but it really did. And it was one of those ones where it's like, you can't really tell when the ride starts, and you're like, am I still in the line? What is happening right now? And that's all I'll say about how immersive it is and how special that was. But yeah, I've been also thinking about buying lightsabers for years at this point, and it was always back and forth between the Ahsoka lightsabers or the Obi-Wan Kenobi lightsabers. His lightsaber. And the reason why his was kind of in the lead was because it's only one lightsaber and much cheaper. But let me tell you, went to Galaxy's Edge and they're like, huh, you like the Obi-Wan Kenobi lightsaber? Well, we're going to package it with Anakin. So you can't buy them on their own. You got to buy them together. And it's like $400 or some shit
Ooh,
like that.
That's
like,
new.
Yeah.
That's new.
Yeah. And so I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm getting the Ahsoka lightsaber. So yeah, that was a fun little thing there that I got to get the Ahsoka lightsabers. It was meant to be. That was life telling me, hey, get the Ahsoka lightsabers.
Oh yeah, you gotta love that. Joining the group as well, we got the one and only Anthony Carboni.
Oh my good Lord, this show, it's the best. I think it's my favorite Star Wars thing, but I'm caught up in the moment right now. But I will tell you this, Andor season one went out exactly the way I wanted it to, and I'll do a quote for you. This one got me. I love him more than anything he could ever do wrong.
Oh, yeah, I wrote that down as well. And then my quote for today, the man who sees everything is more blessed than cursed.
Oh, my God. Did this damn show rounding out the group today with hair to match the show. Brand new hair. You got to love it. Sage Ryan, how you doing?
I screamed. I frightened my cats. I cried. And I also wrote down a quote. And mine is, the Empire is a disease that thrives in darkness, and it is never more alive than when we are asleep.
God, so good. We've been asleep. Every time she says we've been asleep, it just fucking hits you so in different ways every time she says it and how she repurposes it. Marva's speech in this finale encapsulates the entirety of this show, which is just a people slowly becoming radicalized under the tyranny of the Empire. And it's so beautifully written and so beautifully told throughout the entire season. But that entire speech was just 10 out of 10.
It's also we'll get more into it, but I think it's also it's a speech for the new era of Star Wars and the tone that they're adding to Star Wars now, which is what I really, really loved about it. And I can talk more about that. Tim, why don't you open this show already?
I don't have you guys took the lines that I would have said. I just want to give a shout out to marching bands. I'm really happy they're back in vogue. I don't know if they're back in vogue. They're in vogue for the first
space marching
time.
Bands, okay.
Space boots, you know, big fan of that. But of course, this is the Kind of Funny Screencast. Each and every week, we get together to talk about the latest in TV, movies, and trailers. Unfortunately, this is the end of Andor. This is the end of the line for us. So no more Star Wars for this year. I don't know what exactly we're going to be doing the next couple of weeks, but I do know we're going to be doing weekly Last of Us starting in January, and I'm very excited about that. But while we're here, remember, you could watch live on youtube.com/kindoffunny. You could also watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunny. If podcasts are your thing, search your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny Screencast. We'll be right there for you. If you wanted to get the show ad free, you got to go to patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like some of our Patreon producers: Morgan Lorraine, Fargo Brady, Hillary Bernard, ID Raven, Immersion Fragrances, Delaney Twining, Christopher Rodriguez, the Kind of Funny Destiny 2PC Club, Corey Turnipseed, Tall Tree 81, Trent Berry, Joseph A. Carlson, Tranquil Uranium, Macro, One Up Pest Control, Alex J. Sandoval, James Hastings, Colin Huguenel, and Carrie Palmer have done. Thank you so very, very much. Today we're brought to you by Shady Rays, but we'll tell you all about that later. I want to get right into it. Sage, let's start with you. What did you think about the finale of Andor Season 1?
There was a lot of things that we speculated happening. We speculated on Marva. We speculated on a special appearance by somebody. And there was a brief moment towards the beginning of the episode that I went, Palpatine.
Oh, really?
The Emperor. They might show the Emperor. And I'm so glad that they didn't. This show has been perfect all the way through for me. And the fact that they let this finale carry itself entirely is not common for Star Wars and immaculate. I wrote down Nemec's entire speech, and
yes,
can they release Nemec's manifesto? Can they release as a book Nemec's manifesto? As a raging commie, I sat there screaming at my television, and I wrote the whole thing down because I Googled it and I couldn't find the whole speech online anywhere yet. I'm sure there's like going to be, but you know, it's only been out for so many hours. So I couldn't find a transcript of the entire speech. So instead, I sat down with the captions on my television and I wrote the entire thing down.
Oh my God. Freedom is a pure idea. It's so amazing. It's so,
so
amazing.
Good. From it also, tyranny requires constant effort. Like every piece of it. And I was texting Anthony while I was watching it, and I texted him and I was like, best speech in Star Wars. Best speech ever in Star Wars. And then Marva spoke, and I was like, I don't know anymore.
Well, I'll tell you, Sage, you sent me one text, which was best speech in Star Wars. Do you remember what the single text I sent to you during this episode was?
I do. It says, I have it right in front of me. It says funeral jizz.
What?
There we go.
There was a band for the funeral, and they played funeral jizz.
For those who don't immediately have that recall to mind, as it took me a moment, jazz in Star Wars is called jizz.
They did a jazz funeral for Marva, and so they were playing funeral jizz. Okay,
but the funeral procession music slapped so hard.
It was really good.
It had no business being that good. Both the like somber, like actual funeral music, and the moment when it kicked. The moment when it kicked was incredible. It wasn't over the top. It was subtle enough that you're like, oh, what's happening?
Yeah.
Oh, what's happening?
And when the march stops and then like B2 like does that weird little like thing and then they pick up and you're like, oh, let's fucking go, man.
Let's go. Yeah. I watched this right before we did this, by the way. So I am filled with like the immediately after watching it.
Carboni, what about you?
Yeah, pitch perfect ending. I think the entire season has been pitch perfect for me. I know there was some stuff that we were a little unsure of in the beginning, but I was I was keeping my hopes up that they were just setting things up. And every time we worried about something, it was that they were just kind of setting things up that were going to pay off. I felt very good about this show all the way through. I think all of these characters had perfect endings and perfect kind of cliffhanger endings. This hit all of the emotional notes that I wanted it to hit. I will tell you, as we start going through it, the moment I exactly gave up on my theory of Marvo still being alive, but, and you probably know what moment it is, but I couldn't have loved this episode more, and they could not have done a better job or given this a better ending. I don't think.
All right.
I'm in complete agreement. I think the way that they were able to thread almost everything that has been set up throughout the season into just this one episode where you're constantly going back and forth between so many different things and none of it feels unearned. It all feels well set up, and you feel the tension of the first guy who is tortured I think like left up for dead or whatever, his son making this bomb throughout the like first third of the episode, but then also catching up with Vel and Cinta, and then the Skarsgård's coming into town, and like all of these different things. And
Clem flashbacks.
And so like just all of these things, and you feel the tension for the entire episode until it bursts at the end of Marva's speech. And it's so goddamn good. Yeah, I thought this was a beautiful way to end the show. I think, like Carboni was saying, especially last week, I do think this is probably the best Star Wars anything. I don't know if it's my favorite Star Wars. Like, again, I have a personal soft spot for the animated stuff, but I think just of pure quality in writing, production, performance, video editing, and pacing, and all that stuff. I really think this is something truly special that and has hit a high that I don't know Star Wars has ever hit before. I'm so excited for what they're gonna do with season two. There's still so many questions. There's so many things that I feel like we got enough answers today on the kind of where people are going, their trajectories with their life, but there's still so much that's set up for like, all right, what's my boy Cyril Figgis going? Like, what's he going to do in season two and stuff like that? I absolutely loved this episode. And even I was watching in bed this morning, and Alyssa, who has not watched any of this show, was also hanging out. And she was like, that was really good, even though I had not watched like any of the other episodes. That was a really good time. So there you go. I feel like the highest praise I can give is her praise there. Yeah.
How was it for you, Tim?
It's a 10. I mean, this season of TV, I think the season is a 10. This finale was a 10. It paid off so well on everything that it built up. I was less high, as we've talked about, on the first couple episodes, and I feel like this show was just so well structured to have those three episodes and this last one kind of feel like the perfect endpoint conclusion to making those three episodes. Like Anthony was saying, like, feels so worth it. All of it was set up, and all the middle episodes I was just so enamored with and loved them so much that I feel like they put every character, every location in a scenario that this episode was able to just kind of in a weird way scale back, it felt, and just deal with the characters, deal with the realness of what's going on in the situation. And for a show that just every episode we're like, oh my God, that's the best monologue ever. And then in that same episode, they outdo themselves. And I feel like they've done that for the last five episodes now to get to this episode and have Marva have that speech, to have the manifesto read, like all of it. It's just like, man, like in terms of like, is this my favorite Star Wars? Is the best Star Wars? Like, it almost doesn't matter because this is perfect. Like, this is a perfect use of Star Wars, and the story that they told and the way that they told it is downright impressive, honestly. Using the toys that they have to play with, I feel like they treated it so seriously. I am still so surprised at how people die in this show, where it just feels real. And it's that we use the word grounded so often to describe things, but this show is grounded in a way that I don't know that I've ever seen before for this type of sci-fi, of people getting shot by a laser and then they just drop down and then the camera just lingers on their body.
Yeah.
And we just look at them, and it's like, it all of a sudden just feels so much more real, where it doesn't just feel like mass numbers kind of running at each other and hitting each other with sticks and stuff. It's like, oh, these are people. These are all individual people that all have stories and lives and friends and relationships, and they are now deciding, and like, whether it's on the small scale or the Mon Mothma scale, deciding like, yo, we need to give up some of our luxuries in life, even if your luxury is just being with your partner in Ferrix or whatever. Barrett being at Galaxy's Edge, watching this episode, I was like so impressed with just this set dressing of Ferrix, where I'm like, this looks like Galaxy's Edge. Like, this is some Star Wars shit. And it's cool to be able to just live in this world and see it so well presented, especially comparing it to some of the other shows that we've talked about of not feeling so great about Boba Fett, how Tatooine was and all that. Like, I believed in this place, and I believed in these people, and I believed in the fight they were in. I believed in the Empire and how they felt. I love the way that this show has dealt with the Empire being really
just
a bunch
of clip of Tim Getty saying, I believe in the Empire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't clip that out.
Don't clip it out. Don't clip that out of context.
Can we just put that out.
What I'm saying is, I believe in where the characters of the Empire we see in this show, the way that they speak to each other, the way that we've countlessly seen them be like, we should use this for practice, or like, we should get better at this. It's like, we're seeing the beginning of this evil, and it's been happening for a while. And to see them all, to see the one dude that's kind of like, all right, guys, go for it. Like, we can't let this happen, this funeral procession, as the music so beautifully rising. And like what Sage was saying, like, not only was the somber stuff great, the moment it like kicks off, it just, that song, that funeral procession, this episode feels like just such a great endpoint reminder of what we felt this entire season, of how the tension has risen the entire time till its breaking point. And this episode's kind of just like the inconclusion of the beautiful essay that was Star Wars Andor season one. And I just want to say, I was saying the show needs to have a post credit that's going to get the normies talking. They pulled it off.
It
wasn't a person, but it was an iconic thing. We all expected it was the Death Star, but seeing it and seeing it the way that they showed it, that's the type of thing that people are going to go, oh shit, really? Cool. Yeah. I'm into this show. And good. This show deserves way more eyes.
And y'all called it with them building the parts at the prison and stuff like that. And and seeing that contextualized was really, really cool to see.
It just, I mean, Cassian Andor being so woven into every level of this thing without even realizing it, before he's even ready to like come to terms with it, that was just such a perfect, that was such a perfect button on it. You know what I mean? Like, he was gonna be in this whether he wanted to or not. It was just absolutely lovely. And of course, I want to shout out Nicholas Britell again for the amazing music in this show, because I feel like he's, I'm not hearing his name as much as like Ludwig Göransson's name, or as much as like, you know, or as much as Giacchino's name. But I want people to be saying his name when it comes to Star Wars music, because I think he's done such an amazing job, and he's just such a versatile composer all the way through this season.
Speaking on the music, I've always loved the use of the theme just for the title screen itself, where you see Andor and like how it sets the stage for like how the vibe and tone of the episode is going to be. And I love that for this one, it's like a cacophonic noise of just booming sounds of the theme, and it just like cuts into, here we are, the funeral is about to happen, we know all the players are about to be in the same place, like what is about to go down.
It was such a chess game. Mm-hmm. It was so fun to watch from that, where you're just like, how does this all work? I would love to talk about Bix.
Yeah,
we got to talk about Bix. I mean, we were going back and forth on whether or not she was like completely hopeless and gone, and I loved her ending for this season. I thought it was incredible. On the ship taking off, he'll find us. And maybe part of me loved that, because I'm like, thank God someone's there to comfort B2. But like sending them off together as both characters that I have loved in this show, and that like door being opened to a new path forward for those characters makes me so excited for season two. I'm so glad that they didn't give us a hopeless end to Bix's story.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I also enjoyed
I want to jump in there just real fast. I just want to say I really appreciate that how the finale tied everything together, because we've been theorizing what we think might happen and came up with a lot of really logical ways things could play out. I love that the way that this played out makes perfect sense, satisfies all of us, and it wasn't what any of us really expected in terms of like character by character endpoints. Or like, when does he join the rebellion? When does this character die? When does this happen? It's just, wow, they did a great job of giving us what we need, not what we want or expect.
Yeah. And I think, you know, especially with this, the great thing about giving us those kinds of endings is like, he'll find us. And he goes, oh yeah, I'll find you. And you see that look in his face, that Cassian look of like, man, I don't know that I'm ever going to find you. And I don't know that I'm ever coming back. And I don't know that you can trust me because I still don't think very much of myself. And just because I came through for you this one time, I wouldn't put all your hope in me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When this whole series, in the first third of this series, he was like, man, why doesn't Bix just like believe in me? And that's Cassian's problem. And I love that it's always Cassian's problem. He's like, hey man, why don't you trust me until somebody trusts him? And he's like, whoa, 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 don't trust me. I never come through. And I just love that that continues even in that, just that little moment there. Seeing Bix totally like, totally broken down where it's like, no, we can't leave. They'll be angry.
I know that was hard. And that's what, when she said that too, I was like, oh, she's too far gone. Cause like they do again, when we're jumping back and forth between so many different threads, every time you see her and just like the way she's kind of like kind of tuned into the funeral, kind of humming along while crying and stuff. You're like, she's kind of there. And like, you're scared of like how much is really going to be there when Cassian shows up to try to and save her. I was really scared that it was going to be more of a fight to get her out of there.
Well, I mean, she even says to Cass, she's like, Marva was here. And he goes, I know, wasn't she great? And it's just like, oh man, you don't know what's going on.
Like, beautiful.
But I do love, I also love that like the Empire, something that they show throughout this entire episode is a regime like the Empire, a government that's trying to be totalitarian like that, thinks they have control over everything and forgets like the human connections that make up an actual community. When Cass breaks into the hotel and pulls the gun on the cook and he goes, oh, hey, Tenek. And he goes, hey, Cass, sorry about your mother. Like, there's nobody on that planet that is loyal to the Empire that didn't show up with the Empire, and the Empire just believes they have control. And I think that's one of the wonderful things that they keep showing with this is like, and it comes back to Nemec's, yeah, it comes back to Nemec's manifesto, right? Where it's like, this is like, it's an impossible thing to keep up. It's brittle. It falls apart because it's not the natural order. You can't impose that order.
The other half of that is Marva's speech, because not yet. But Marva's speech is, we've been sleeping because we've had each other. And like, as beautiful as it is to be able to find goodness in your community and to be able to ignore the outside world because you have each other, it's made them completely unaware of them being completely infiltrated in their own community.
Yeah.
And so much of her speech is about that. It's like, I know we love each other. What the hell are we gonna do with it?
Yes.
That's useful and not just surviving.
Well, and it's funny because you wonder watching this episode, something they don't do, which I think is wonderful, is they don't show little minutiae of how much of Marva's funeral, how much of Rick's road was planned? How much did everybody know about everybody else's plan? When Brasso looks over at Willman, Pax's kid, who, by the way, is named for Bo Willman, who's one of the writers on the series. When Brasso looks over at Willman and kind of gives him this eye and Willman looks back at him, you get the feeling like Brasso knows Willman's about to pull something. Does Brasso know that there's a bomb? Does Brasso know how big this thing that he pulls is going to be? And you get the feeling that not everybody knows what everybody else is going to do.
Yeah, they all just know that they're ready to fight. Yeah, they're ready to fight back, which...
Like, how much do the daughters of Ferrix know about all this? Right. How much do they know about, like, the speech that was left behind? How much, like, who's watched that speech? Has anybody watched that speech? Like, how much did B2 know? Right?
B2 knew.
Yeah.
By the way that B2 moves when the music changes, the band knew something was up. There is some coordination level within the community, and I love that we didn't see it. I love that too.
It's the moment. It's like
everything we're just saying. We're talking about Star Wars, you guys.
I know.
Like, how the hell is like this is awesome TV, man, and it also it's happens so to good. Be awesome Star Wars.
I think
Marva saved Bix.
I think so too.
Marva was here because you can see her leaning up against the wall listening to Marva's speech. And I think that is the only reason
why she got back. Pulled out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also want to point out, we're talking about B2. I think the first time he actually speaks at all is at the end of the episode, and he says Cassian. Because he does not talk at all, I think, throughout the funeral or anything like that. And it was just like when he just does the little Cassian, and you're just like, oh my guy, you're just forever sad, and it makes me sad all the time.
I know, I love it so much.
And extra hell goes to the person who kicked over B2 when shit popped off.
Do we love that it was the kicking over of B2 that really fucking ended it for everybody? Yeah. Everybody was like,
That's when everybody was like, all right, now it's time to fight.
You don't know what he's been through. But I don't know. This episode was so good at so many things. We got that scene with Clem in the beginning where he's like, nobody looks down. Nobody looks at the rust. Nobody sees beyond the rust. They got rid of these because they want to sell you a new one. And it's just like, what is that? Oh, well, that thing, that part right there is called an intergalactic metaphor. And it's like, like that's literally all it was. And but I loved it though, because you see the two different sides of Cassian's upbringing, right? Where we've seen Marba, who's like, fight for this. And Cassian's like, whoa, calm down. And then you see Clem, who's like, hey man, get by. They won't see you. Nobody's looking. You can do what you need to. And you just sort of like two parents who separately were a little too idealistic in two different ways coming together. And you see these ideals come together in Cassian and finally make, whether he knows it or not, one really, really good rebel.
Yeah.
And it's lovely to see that, you know, and even in the what Brasso is told by Marva to tell Cassian, where it's like, he knows everything he needs to know. He feels everything he needs to feel. And when those two pull together, he's going to be an unstoppable force for good. And I love that.
I want to keep talking about Star Wars Andor's finale. But before we do that, real quick, I want to give some more shout outs to Patreon producers Skylar Peterson, Casey Andrew, Elliot, Brian Cheney, Casey Curran, G. Greg, Trevor Starkey, Adam, Jacob Moyfelt, Super Daddy Kyle, who always makes me smile, Undertopian, David Mindtel, the Mind Freak, Jordan from Kansas, Cameron Bowes, Jake Holbs, David Huzanga, Jerica Chu, Molecule, Nathan Lamoth, Monica Boominlog, and Delaney Twining. Thank you so very much. Because you support us on Patreon, you don't need to check out these ads, but for everyone else, here's the ads. So one of the things I loved about this episode as well was seeing the Empire kind of in disguise as the more rebel side, like seeing Dedra walk around like in the town, kind of like doing a whole sneaky sneak thing. I was like, this is cool, because we don't often see that side of things, right? Like, we always see people pretending to be Imperial officers or whatever, but like, I like that they built this character and characters with Mr. Serial to kind of like be the, all right, these are the bad guys, and we don't believe in them, but like, we understand what they're doing and why they're here. And I just love that they're both so obsessed with getting Andor at this point and like figuring this whole thing out. Love the line about today was about wiping the taste of Aldani from the Emperor's mouth. Like, just such a good just single line. Yeah. The poetry, the lyricism of that line, I love so much. The delivery of it from our boy over there, so good. But to get to the rising tension where we're seeing it, obviously, from the protagonist's point of view, we're rooting for the good guys, but it gets scary for Dedra at the end when she's like getting trampled and kind of beat up, and then the space cop pulls her out. I was like,
not a field agent. Not a field agent, yeah.
But also at the same time, I was like, "Yeah, get her ass!" Like, I yelled that out loud when she started getting trampled and stuff. I was like, "Fuck yes!" And then
it's funny because you forget that her title throughout the series is analyst.
Yeah,
she's a data analyst.
Yeah, she's not.
And she convinces herself, just like Cyril,
but Tim,
she could go out there
where Cyril pulls Deidre into there. Way too much sexual tension between those Nazis, right?
Yeah, I didn't love that. I honestly, she was like, I should say thank you right now. And he's like, you don't have to. And I was like, that's, I really wanted her to kill him there. I don't know why. I really wanted her to be like, no, you fucking followed me when I told you not to. Like, I want to kill. And granted, my boy Cyril Figgis here, a very fascinating.
Your boy?
No, not my boy in that sense, but just like, but Cyril Figgis.
Can we clip that out? Can we clip that out and put that next to Tim's? I love the Empire.
Oh, shit.
My
boy in the sense that he is a fascinating character, and he's a great character study. I that was like the one thing where I was like, all right, I get why they want to keep him alive, because he is fascinating, and what they're going to do with him in season two is going to be a very interesting second half to his story. But at the same time, for her character, I really wanted her to be like, no, you fuck it. Like, I get that you just saved me, but no, I told you to fucking stay away from me.
And I think you feel that energy.
His first kiss.
I went both ways with it, right?
I thought Cyril was going to have his first kiss.
Me too. I legit did.
So I went both ways with it. I was like, he might try to kiss her. I don't know. But like, her energy was like, he just saved my life. Oh no, I looked like an idiot out there. Oh no, he's the one that saved my life.
Right.
Oh no. Like, there was just like a lot
of
different
performance from her, Dedra, like getting all of that across.
Yeah.
Man, even on public, though, I do think that there was that element of the field that she's not a field agent. I do think that there was a humbling moment to her where she was like, this guy saved me, and I kind of needed him, and I don't want to need him, but I did. And I think there was that moment of reflection where she was like, I don't have this all figured out. I can't do this all by myself.
Well, so, and that's the thing, is the two of them coming together like this is, you know, we've seen in this season the partisans, Saw Gerrera. We know that there are extremists on the side of the rebellion. You think that you don't really need extremists within the Empire because they're the Empire. They're already like far fascist, right? Like, whatever. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. We're watching throughout the entire season, and especially through this episode, when Partagaz is like, no, this was about, like you said, getting the taste of Aldani out of the Emperor's mouth. It's like, everything is for show. Everything's for a promotion. And she's like, somebody needed to be in the room to tell you not to kill this guy because he has information. Mm-hmm. And throughout this entire episode, she's telling everybody else, they're like, oh yeah, we can put a guy right there. And she's like, no, don't kill him. We need to ask him things. And they're just like, they don't get it. And the fact that Cyril is the only other person that gets what she's saying is starting to make the two of them very dangerous and very, very off-putting. You know, like, they're going to get weird. They're going to get weird.
Oh yeah, it's going to get real weird. That's one thread that I'm not excited to see where that goes, because it's going to be creepy, baby.
That moment with him and Mosk on the transport.
What was that with the hats? Why were they switching hats?
So Cyril had the Imperial hat.
Okay.
And Mosk had a civilian hat, and Mosk offered his civilian hat to Cyril to help his disguise, right? Okay. Because that's his commanding officer. And all I could think about the two of them was just like, these two fucking Rittenhouses, just these two little online militia idiots, and just Mosk just putting all of his faith into Cyril, and then that shot at the end of Mosk drinking alone, because Cyril has left him.
Oh yeah,
Cyril
yeah.
has left him in the dirt for Dedra, and it's just it was gross. Everything they did was gross.
Yeah, the hot thing, thank you for explaining it, because I was a little confused there too. But I just love even the public transportation that we've been seeing in these shows. Like, we saw it in Mando, we saw it in Boba Fett, now in Obi-Wan, and now seeing this, it's like, it just makes the universe and these worlds and planets just feel so much more like real places. And I love just like these guys, that it's exactly what you're saying. Like, they're assholes that are just the online 4chan motherfuckers. Yeah. And it's like, just seeing them take public transportation to their like little meetup spot. It's just very funny to me.
And I love the moment too, where the funeral's popping off, and then Cyril's trying to get through, and he just gets pushed back like the little fucking nerd he is by the Empire, where he's just like, he walks in like he owns the place. And then it's like just a reminder of like, no, dude, like, you're just a guy.
Yeah.
Sit the fuck
while
down.
They're arriving too. You know, we also have, Luthen arriving and Vel arriving. Luthen, I just want to give a shout out to Luthen Rail's Arcturic store card, because that dude is buying the best ponchos and hoodies and freaking that dude is like his, when Luthen is in the field, his wardrobe is all like a cold wall. You know what I mean? He is tech wear to the max, and I love it. Did you notice, though? I love, and Barrett, I feel like you would have been the guy to really clock this. He comes and goes exactly like Maul does.
Yeah.
He comes and goes exactly like Maul does in the prequels. Mm-hmm. He lands in the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
He gets on his little speeder. He pulls his hood up. He doesn't get his guy. Mm-hmm. And he drives away.
Yeah. So you're saying here is that there is going to be an eventual Maul connection with Luthien.
What I'm saying
is Maul
in season two.
Yeah.
Here's what I'll say about not getting his guy. Okay, I want to talk about how all of a sudden all the stormtroopers have impeccable aim and one hit kills for this whole series.
Oh, yeah.
One shot with the blaster is now deadly.
Those good ones real quick. You know what I mean? They burn through those good ones real quick, and then they don't get the best enlisting. You know what I mean? They're not stealing the best babies by
sense.
The time you get to the original trilogy.
That makes
sense. And we also,
the one shot, one kill. It's like it made the stakes feel real, and it like you worried about every character when they're in precarious situations. Like Cinta running through that beautiful shot, the running through the smoke, the one shot falling, going in, stabbing the guy. It's like she could have died, and I'm like, I'm happy she didn't because she's awesome, you know. And I love the dynamic between her and Vel. And Vel just as a character. We didn't even talk about Mon Mothma yet.
Yeah.
The scene of her in the car just sitting there, just breathing.
We got to put a pin in Mon Mothma for sure.
Yep.
But when we're talking about Cinta and Vel, and Vel's just like taking forever to read the room. Like, read the room, Vel. Like, it's not about you today. Yeah. It's unfortunately not going to be about you.
For a bit.
Maybe until the Death Star gets destroyed. You know what I mean, Vel?
It reminds me of the character in the Ahsoka book who like had kind of fallen a little bit for Ahsoka, but she could not think about that at that time because now it's wartime. We can't think about that kind of stuff.
Cinta's such a badass.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cinta's so cool.
She is so cool.
And what I do love, somebody pointed this out, and somebody who's watching live pointed this out as well. It's easy for the rebels to pick out an Imperial undercover. There's something about an Imperial undercover where they just can't blend in.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's Corvo's or whatever his name is, Corv's posture and the way he carries himself when he's walking through, and Cinta just clocks him immediately as ISB because they just can't blend in. And she's also just good at her job, man.
Yeah. Yep.
She's so good. And poor Vel is just like, I think Vel is still reeling from the revelation she had last episode where she realized that she put Mon into the situation that she's in and that Luthien doesn't care about her any more than anybody else does. Vel is learning that nobody in the rebellion is cared for any more than anybody else when it's mission time. And that's really starting to hurt Vel's feelings a lot. And
especially
I wonder what that's
she
going.
She was raised like basically royalty there. She was raised wealthy.
Yeah. Right. And that's the thing, right? Is it's just like, I want to go do something worthwhile, but still I'm used to being treated like a little princess. So what's going on here?
I want to know the story of why Mon got in this whole like pathway of the marriage and all of that and Vel didn't.
Yeah, you wonder if it's older and younger or something like that, or she's
like
a cousin.
Like if the tradition had passed or something.
Yeah, if maybe because she's a cousin, her family doesn't have the same station that Mon's family does. Like, you know how in every fantasy, like royalty sort of thing, or real royalty, it's like you've got the family that's next in line, and then you've got their cousins who are like dukes and like duchesses and things like that, where it's like, Vel's just not as important, maybe, is what I get the feeling for. And so she's able to not have to carry herself as well as Mon does. But you're right, Tim, in that our Lady Geraldine needs to get her flowers because she's in this episode for 2 minutes and it's so good.
And then so sad, the end.
I in the beginning of this episode, I think to myself, She's figured it out. Why not throw Perrin under the bus? Everybody knows that Perrin's a terrible guy.
Yeah.
All you have to do is say, I know my driver's a spy. Perrin, you're gambling again. We're losing money.
It felt like such a desperate attempt too, though. And it did feel really, even in the moment, really weak. And you get like the follow-up on it where you see that kind of Dedra's rival is the one who is like really looking into to Mon there. And
yeah, I believe it's like Levis or whatever.
Yeah. And he's like, this is interesting. Keep listening in, stuff like that. And do you think that the end there where they're walking in and, you know, having the children meet, do you think that's her just also not believing in that attempt that she tried to make of like blaming it on him? Because I felt like even in the middle of her performance in the back of the car, she's not even really feeling it in a way of like trying to sell this lie.
She gives like a little, there's a slight moment where she gives like a little bit of like, ha ha ha, this worked, but she like barely in the car. But at the end, when you see Davos Skaldin's kid and you're just like, you did it. You sold her out. You sold your daughter out. You sold your daughter out. We were trying to give you more credit than that. And you did it. Because here's the thing. Let's say she covers up that 400,000 credits that's missing. The Empire or the Rebellion's going to need more money, and it's going to need to be hidden better. And she's going to need Davos Skaldin.
Is it bad that I don't think it's that bad? Like, the structure in itself is pretty bad, but, like, your daughter's an asshole that wants this.
She doesn't know any better. She's a kid.
I do get that. But right now it is just an introduction, supposedly, for right now. We all know what that means. But in this scenario where the kid's like, I want this, like, old school structure. It was the thing we were talking about last week of all these like revisionist history idealists of like, I want to be a housewife. In the consequences of the importance we understand Mon Mothma to be, when the ultimatum was given, I was like, yeah, that's probably what you're going to have to do.
I would do anything for Bravo to green light Real Housewives of Coruscant.
Oh my god,
sorry Sage, continue.
No, that's perfect. That's absolutely perfect. I was just like, yeah, that's probably what you're gonna have to do to save the galaxy. And it's not like it's not a Game of Thrones situation, so maybe the like comparison of our like fantasies is a little bit off, but it's not a Game of Thrones situation. We don't know anything bad about this boy yet.
But we know that he comes from a crime family.
I mean,
we know that you're marrying your kid into this crime family.
With all we know, he could be another Joffrey here. I'm just saying.
He could be. That's what I'm saying, is we don't know anything to tell us he is yet.
Right.
I think it's a terrible structure and obviously a horrific tradition. But in the scale of saving the galaxy right now with the information we have, it didn't make me dislike Mon Mothma in any way.
I got a little bummed at Mon Mothma for doing it. I understand that she's been painted into a corner, and I certainly am not now... I'm certainly not anti-Mothma. I would never be, but
can't be.
I do think that like, if you're trying, you know, throughout this whole season, we're like, she's not as bad as her family thinks. She's just doing more important things. She does care. And it's like, when you see this at the end, it's like, I wish you'd tried a little harder or taken a little more time to find another way here, Mon Mothma.
I felt heartbroken that she had to. But that's how I felt about it. I didn't feel like there was another option she didn't try hard enough or take. I felt heartbroken that she had to do this, because here's the thing. Her husband doesn't have a problem with it. Her daughter doesn't have a problem with it. The rest of the family doesn't have a problem with it. She's actually the only one who's against it.
It's rough. It's rough. I don't like it. And I'm very interested in seeing, because season two, we know, is an accelerated timeline. If this arranged marriage happened, or this arranged courtship happens, we're going to see it in super speed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be
interesting to see that.
It'll be very House of the Dragon season one there, which will be interesting to see that, see them pull that off. A couple of things I want to talk about before we wrap up. In the middle of everything, right, this whole battle between the Empire and the locals is happening. All this stuff. Luthen's been there the entire time. He hears this speech from Cassian's mother, this guy that he hired as a hired gun, not really believing in him a lot, but then hears what his mother has to say, sees what's going on with the local population who weren't even an official rebel cell. Like, yeah, Bix seemed to have had more contact with him than they might have let on, but it's not like the entire local population there was a part of the thing that he was building. And then seeing all of that and then him, you know, leaving, not getting his man and stuff like that. There was a shot where he's kind of like looking over the town before you see him leave. And I was thinking of like, this is this moment where he finally like is like, maybe I don't know Cassian well, but maybe he's not as much of a risk as I thought originally.
Yeah.
Well, the note that I took was like, you know, Luthen is here and he still wants Andor dead. And I mean, like, it's been months and Cassian hasn't said shit. How much of a loose thread is Cassian at this point?
Right.
Like, why is Luthen obsessing over this one thing? I understand that Luthen is starting to get a little nervous and he's coming apart at the seams a little bit, but like, damn, man, I think at this point I'm more worried about Vel than I'm worried about Cassian.
Right.
You know,
that's a good
if
point.
I'm really paying attention to my agents, like it's very interesting to me. I don't know, but I do love that he finally like understands where Cassian comes from. And the scene between the two of them at the end where he's like, the subtext with Cassian is like, hey man, if this gets you off of my remaining family's back, then yeah, kill me. Go ahead.
Yeah. No,
like, go ahead. There's the gun. Go ahead.
Love it.
Kill me or take me in. Cause I got things to say. If you don't want to hear them, you don't have to hear them, but just please leave these people alone.
Yeah.
Don't chase them because you're chasing me. They don't deserve it, which is like Cassian being selfless.
Finally.
For the first time.
Yeah.
We love it. We love it. Cause we know we've established there's no therapy in Star Wars. So for him to come to this on his own is a huge deal.
Yeah.
A huge deal.
Again, the entire show is about the radicalization of people. And Andor was the one who was slowest to like kind of get to that point, but he got there. Like, I love the end, right? Where it was like, the wheels were turning for me in this scene, right? Where he's letting them go. He's going to stay behind. I was like, why? What is he planning? And then you kind of think back to the moment where, we were talking about Luthen's great fashion style when he's trying to be low key, but it's almost like too low key that he does stand out. So Cassian is able to see him from literally like a mile away, and it's like,
guy trying to be sneaky. He
yeah, exactly. And so he's like, "Huh, that's interesting. He's probably here to kill me." And I love how that kind of all came back together, and you know, seeing him. Seeing Luthen leave the town, I was like, man, I really wanted one more moment between him and Cass. And like when you see him like walk onto the ship, you're like, oh no, he's already here. And I love the kind of the interesting non-ultimatum he gives him, right? Where he's like, kill me or take me in, where it's just like, fuck yes. He is now ready to fight, which I love that. Like this the entire first season was just about this, and now season two is Andor's fight. The fight that he now knows he's a part of. Season one was him being a part of a fight he didn't know he was in, and then season two will be him actually partaking in it consciously.
Yeah. A couple threads that I wanna mention here. I do love the thread of Nurchi, the guy who tries to sell out Cassian and ends up getting taken in by the Imperials and then like blown up.
And he just finds him, right? And it's just like, what the fuck is he doing here? Again, so many threads.
Cassian looks at him and goes, oh, I know that guy. Like, he just gives this look like, I know that guy. Who's that guy?
Yeah.
It's like Nurchi, right? Like,
he wanted to collect money for me. And it was like one of those things where I love that at the beginning, you're like, oh my God, so many different people are looking for Cassian for their own gain. And then like in the middle of the episode, it's like when you realize he's actually like kind of working for the ISB, because you assume it's like, oh, he's trying to get the money back from Cassian or whatever. But no, now he's just like, oh, I'm just going to collect this bounty or whatever from the ISB. And just kind of seeing that. I loved that little moment where he's just like, he will probably never know that story, never know why he was there, never know that he was working with the ISB to find him or whatever.
He's just like, oh shit, they got Nurchi, man. I also do love Brasso. I don't know if we mentioned it, but Brasso starting to knock out Imperials with Marva's stone.
Yes. So good.
That's a moment. That's an image. that's a vibe.
Him also just like headbutting people at a certain point. He was just like, he was just like, fuck it. I'm destroying myself to fight these people too.
Oh, I love it too, because the Marva speech is so good, but it ending with fight the Empire.
And then they're know.
All in the freaking rage mode, headbutting motherfuckers. I'm like, this is great. But I love that they literally had fight the Empire as the
yes.
law. It is exactly what it is. It's so simple, but it's just there's an elegance to it.
If I could do it again, I would wake up early and fight the Empire. Fuck. It's again, like I've been saying, they've been in their fucking Duffy in dialogue and soliloquy writing here this entire show. Go ahead.
I was going to say with another thing that I loved about that scene is when they set up. Oh yeah, we gave them a permit for 30 people. They wanted more, so we gave them 40. And then they show that wide shot of the funeral procession. When you realize the funeral procession is going to turn into a riot, is when they show that wide shot, and you're like, oh, everyone shows up for Marva.
Yeah,
everyone. And in the beginning, we were like, man, Cassian owes everybody money. Cassian seems like such a prick. Why does everybody deal with Cassian? And then throughout this season, we find out it's because. Ferrix, the entire planet of Ferrix loves Marva Andor.
Uh-huh. And she loves Cassian more than anything bad he could ever do. Yeah. So they're all like, it's just Marva's jackass son.
It's so good. It's so good.
Love that we got one last climb this episode.
Yes!
He tells him at the very end, he's like, once you get out of the water, climb. Like, let's go, baby.
You gotta climb. That's the only way you get out.
Yeah.
A couple threads that like we didn't get answers to. Where's the sister? Are we talking about the sister anymore?
I mean, Marva told him to give up on finding his sister.
Yeah.
Sure. Marva says a lot of things. Cassian doesn't listen.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wouldn't be surprised either way if we get a plot in season two, or that's just kind of how things go. She's not there.
Yeah, I wonder if they're gonna pay that off, or if they've decided to let it go. I do wonder, of course, what's going to happen with Dedra and Cyril. I wonder if after Bix and Brasso and B2 separate off, are they going to see Cassian again?
My prediction is that because he becomes an actual spy at a certain point. I think he might run into them without them being aware while he is undercover as a spy, and not really being able to say a goodbye at one point. And that'll be like the kind of last time that they unknowingly see each other, from their perspective, at least.
Cassian is such a deadbeat dad to that droid. When he says, I'm counting on you, and B2 goes, you always say that. Yeah. And you always come through. It's just like, that's such a deadbeat dad shitty thing to say. Like, yeah, and you always do, buddy. All right, bye.
Yep.
Dad's got to go do some greens in Space Miami.
God. Sage, any final thoughts on this episode and Andor as a whole?
I'm so excited for what this means for everything. I am also sitting in the space of this is sitting up at the very top of my Star Wars. I think that, like, the rebellion is what I love about Star Wars, the uprising and the gathering of it. And I'm sure it hits in a lot of people's hearts, like particularly intensely right now, like it does in mine. There was one more moment that we didn't get to talk about. There was just one point where as soon as he gets into the room with Bix and he sees her, there's a point where I just wanted to shout out the editing, where there's just a tiny sound and he reaches for his gun and it's very subtle and they cut away from it. And they didn't make it like a big thing in a cliffhanger, but like it spoke to how well-timed this whole episode and this whole season was. I'm very excited to see more about the rebellion. And I was never team less Jedi. And now I'm like, yeah, whatever, man. No Jedi. Let's just see a bunch of rebels kicking people off bell towers.
Yes.
Couple only final thoughts.
Yeah, it's been a perfect show so far. I love it. It's just built and built. Everybody who's been coming in late, welcome to the best Star Wars thing there's been in a good long while, if not of all time. And I can't believe we've got to wait like a year for more.
They just started production on season two, right? Like
I'm
yesterday.
I'm going to go nuts. Oh, and one last thing I wanted to say to everyone about this episode. The name, the title of the guy who bangs the anvil on the top of the bell tower is Time Grappler. He's the official time grappler of Ferrix.
That's awesome.
Hell yeah.
Awesome.
That Owen.
Closing thoughts?
I've got two things, because we've been talking about this in connection with Rogue One. We did the Rogue One re-review and things like that. And I think this finally delivered on the substance I was looking from Rogue One. And that, I think, can be said with just the what you brought up earlier, Tim, where the guy is choking out the stormtrooper and he gets blasted, just one single blast, and they linger on him for a while on the floor. And it's the buddy who's part of, like, the local transport, who kind of
Rashi.
Yeah, Rashi. His arc in just this episode, where he kind of realizes that he might be the reason that Cassian is coming back, might not know what he's coming back into. You know, the guy who wants is now secretly working for the ISB, is trying to, like, manipulate him while drinking and stuff like that. Just all of that and how much that weighs on him throughout the episode, and then how much he is willing to fight at the very end, and then seeing his death and feeling like it all kind of, like, just got taken away so quickly from him, not being able to really do anything major to make up for whatever guilt he was carrying. I think that character in and of itself is weighs heavier than anything that happened in Rogue One. I'm going to be honest. That's just my takeaway, at least. And I think that's just how they wrote it, and how they wrote a lot of this season. But just with that, there's just a lot more substance here that I love that we're finally getting from this section of Star Wars. Yes. That actually carries, you know, the thing I loved about Rogue One, how visually it just looked so visually is the best looking Star Wars. And I think the writing is finally caught up with that. And then the last thing I'll say, we said it before, but I want to say it one more time. We are Ferrix. We were sleeping. If I could do it again, I would wake up early and fight the Empire.
Editor's note, I meant Zan, not Rashi.
Thank you.
Also, shout out to the Canto Bite reference in this one.
Yes!
Didn't expect that in Andor. Yeah, fantastic show. I love that that a Disney Plus show, that a Star Wars show could be this good. I will always take my Jedi and lightsabers because that's the type of shit that I love. I want this too, and they don't need to be the same thing. I want them to coexist, and I love that this show is just like, we have our own place. We're going to do our own thing. It is a 10. It is perfect. I love it so much. Can't wait for more. Sage, where can people find you?
You can find me everywhere on the internet at NotSage, or you can find me on twitch.tv/PixelCircus, hanging out with Anthony all the time for our morning gaming and pop culture news show called It's Too Early.
Fantastic. Carboni, where can people find you?
You can find me everywhere on the internet at A Carboni, except for on Twitch, where I am at Anthony Carboni. Twitch, you cowards, it's mine. Give it back to me. Also, tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Pacific time, if you'd like to join me for we're going to be watching on my Discord the Garfield Thanksgiving special. We're going to get Garfed.
Of course.
We're going to get Garfed real early tomorrow.
Good. Oh, that is fantastic stuff. Before we end this last round of Patreon producers, to give a shout out to Ryan Anderson, Kenny Kimball, Eric Velasquez, Ivan Quiz, Scotty Wyatt, Alex Gradle, Mama Murr, Al Tribesman, The Predator, Jacob Meyer, Stefan Stryker, Gordon McGuire, Burt Meg, Jason L, James Davis Makes, Nanobiologist, Arrow Joe, DJ Kento on Twitch, Ryan T from Tennessee, Derek Gehrig, Donald Eccles, ShortFuse06, Jordan Harrison, and Sean Valoric. Thank you all so very much. And for everyone else, till next time. May the Force be with you.